Chapter 5. Hay problemas. The courier's dreams are made of hot metal, shadows that scream and run, mountains the color of concrete. They are burying the orphans on a hillside, plastic coffins, pale blue, clouds in the sky, the priest's tall hat. They do not see the first shell coming in from the concrete mountains. It punches a hole in everything. The hillside, the sky, a blue coffin, the woman's face. A sound, too vast to be any sound at all, but through it, somehow, they hear, arriving only now, the distant, festive pop-popping of the mortars, tidy little clouds of smoke rising on the gray mountainside. He comes upright, alone in the wide bed, trying to scream, and the words are in a language he no longer allows himself to speak. His head throbs. He drinks flat water from the stainless carafe on the nightstand. The room sways, blurs, comes back into focus. He forces himself from the bed, pads naked to the tall, old-fashioned windows, fumbles the heavy drapes aside. San Francisco. Dawn like tarnished silver. It is Tuesday, not Mexico. In the white bathroom, wincing in the sudden light, scrubbing cold water into his numb face. The dream recedes but leaves a residue. He shivers, cold tile unpleasant beneath his bare feet. The whores at the party. This Harwood, decadent. The courier disapproves of decadence. His work brings him into contact with real wealth, genuine power. He meets people of substance. Harwood is wealth without substance. He puts out the bathroom light and gingerly returns to his bed, favoring the ache in his head. With a striped duvet drawn up to his chin, he begins to sort through the previous evening. There are gaps. Overindulgence. He disapproves of overindulgence. Harwood's party. The voice on the phone instructing him to attend. He'd already had several drinks. He sees a young girl's face. Anger, contempt. Her short dark hair twisted up in spikes. His eyes feel as if they are too large for their sockets. When he rubs them, bright, sick flashes of light surround him. The cold weight of the water moves in his stomach. He remembers sitting at the broad mahogany desk, drinking, before the call, before the party. He remembers the two cases open in front of him, identical. He keeps her in one. The other is for that with which he has been entrusted. Expensive, but then he has no doubt that the information it contains is very valuable. He folds the thing's graphite earpieces and snaps the case shut. Then he touches the case that holds all her mystery, the white house on the hillside, the release she offers. He puts the cases in the pockets of his jacket. But now he tenses beneath the duvet, his stomach twisted with a surge of anxiety. He wore the jacket to that party, much of which he cannot remember. Ignoring the pounding of his head, he claws his way out of the bed and finds the jacket crumpled on the floor beside a chair. His heart is pounding. Here, that which he must deliver, zipped into the inner pocket. But the outer pockets are empty. She is gone. He roots through his other clothing. On his hands and knees, a pulsing agony behind his eyes, he peers under the chair. Gone. But she, at least, can be replaced, he reminds himself, still on his knees, the jacket in his hands. He will find a dealer in that sort of software. Recently, he now admits, he had started to suspect that she was losing resolution. Thinking this, he is watching his hands unzip the inner pocket, drawing out the case that contains his charge, their property, that which must be delivered. He opens it. The scuffed black plastic frames, the label on the cassette worn and unreadable, the yellowed translucence of the audio beads. He hears a thin, high sound emerge from the back of his throat, very much as he must have done years ago when the first shell arrived.